Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Tuesday, January 31st, 2023. On today's episode of the show, we are going to be talking about the most interesting movies we saw at the 2023 Sundance Film Festival. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And editor and chief film critic Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right. So obviously the big news everybody is talking about today is all of the stuff that came out of DC and the announcements from James Gunn and Peter Safran. So of course, we're not going to talk about any of that today. We're just going to do a Sundance recap podcast. I think Peter and probably Ryan will be on an episode tomorrow breaking down all the DC stuff. So before Sundance gets too far in the rearview mirror, we wanted to take some time because all of us covered the festival in a myriad number of ways to just run through the movies that we either really loved or thought were super interesting or maybe think that people are going to be talking about as this year goes on. So let's just sort of go like around the horn and each person talk about one movie and we'll end up with 15 total. So let's kick it off with Chris. What's the first one you want to talk about?
I want to talk about Eileen, which is a film that stars Anne Hathaway and Thomasin McKenzie. This is based on a book, but I went into it pretty much blind. I just knew who was in it. And I was like, well, that's good enough for me. And I will avoid spoiling it. Even if you read the book, you can, you know, keep it to yourself out there. But this is not what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but it kind of starts off like Carol in that it's set in the 60s. Carol's the 50s, but it's close enough. And it's snowy and it's Christmas time. And there's this young woman who is drawn to an older woman. And you think, oh, this is going to be, you know, a Carol situation. And it is not that at all. There's something a lot different going on here. And there's a point where the movie takes like this almost crazy twist. And you're either going to be on board with it or you're going to be like, well, I wasn't expecting that. And therefore, I don't like it. And there were a lot of people at Sundance who actually were like that. They were like, The twist made me not like the movie, and I'm in the opposite camp, whereas the twist made me like the movie even more. So this doesn't have a release date yet, as far as I know, but I hope people enjoy this as much as I did, because it's either going to be well-liked or it's going to be a movie where people are going to be like, I didn't care for that at all. So I don't think there's going to be like a middle ground with this.
Yeah, I also love this movie. Brad, did you have a chance to see Eileen?
No, unfortunately, I missed this one.
Okay. All right. Well, Brad, let's go to you. What is something that you did have a chance to see?
I really dug Still, a Michael J. Fox movie. This was easily my favorite documentary of the festival, and I was expecting to enjoy this movie because I love Michael J. Fox. You know, I'm a sucker for stories that kind of dig into the careers and lives of actors and filmmakers that I love. But I was not expecting this movie to be put together in such a slick and impressive way. It's directed by Davis Guggenheim, who is probably best known for directing An Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore environmentalism climate change documentary. And with this documentary about Michael J. Fox, they have pieced it together in such a fashion that uses clips from Michael J. Fox's performances on film and TV with some very cinematic dramatizations and cut them together in a way that makes the movie feel like a narrative. There are still some talking heads with Michael J. Fox, you know, when he's commenting on his career and life and whatnot. But the way that the clips from his movies and shows are juxtaposed with the voiceover, it just tells a story in such a mesmerizing fashion. In one particular part, there's Michael J. Fox talking about the crazy long days he had when he was working on Family Ties during the day and then getting trucked over to the Universal lot to shoot Back to the Future towards the end of the day and into the evenings, and then only getting 2 to 3 hours of sleep. And the way Guggenheim stitches together footage that shows like how this worked, the dramatizations he shot, they did such a great job matching up how Michael J. Fox looked in both the show and the movies and transferring from one to the other. It's just done in such a seamless and really cool way, and it just makes it thoroughly entertaining to watch.
Yeah, this movie is a ton of fun. I can't wait for people to see this. I think Apple TV Plus picked this up. Is that right, Brad?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know the release date off the top of your head?
I don't think it had the release date. Yeah, they've just announced that they have it, and so it'll be coming out sometime this year.
Okay. Another one that people will definitely have a chance to see, I think this year, if Netflix is smart, is a movie called Fair Play, which Netflix picked up for, I think, a reported like $15 or $20 million or something out of the festival. It was like one of the big movies that where there was a big bidding war. And Fair Play is about a couple who are in their late 20s, played by Phoebe Denevor from Bridgerton and Alden Ehrenreich, who played Han Solo in Solo, A Star Wars Story. And they work at this high-powered hedge fund on Wall Street. And there is a, they work in this environment where it's very like a Wolf of Wall Street, sort of like the movie Wall Street, like really, really high energy, sort of alpha male personas going on there. And, you know, the type of place where when somebody gets fired, they like smash their computer with, to bits with a golf club kind of place. And there is, when somebody does get fired, a position opens up in management. And Alden Ehrenreich's character thinks that he is going to score this big promotion. And it turns out that his wife, Emily, his fiance, Emily, is the one who actually is going to get this job. And the whole rest of the movie plays out sort of detailing the consequences of that decision and sort of how it affects this the couple's dynamic. And it's really, really fascinating stuff. I've seen a lot of people compare it to something like, I don't know, like Fatal Attraction, or there's like erotic thrillers of the 90s. And it has a little bit of that. I feel like it's much more modern than that, though. It definitely feels like a movie that is sort of interrogating a lot of, I guess, dynamics that people have been talking about for the past few years anyway. It seems like a little bit too advanced for a 90s throwback. But Chloe Domont is the director behind this, and I think she's definitely a new filmmaker to watch. This is her first, her feature debut, and man, I just was very, very impressed with what she did here. So Fair Play is going to be coming to Netflix at some point. I know they acquired it. I don't know. It doesn't have a release date yet, but definitely keep your eyes peeled for this one, because it would really be a shame if this movie just ends up dumped into the Netflix algorithm and nobody ever sees it. So that would be my choice for the first one. Chris, let's go back around to you. What was another one you liked or thought was interesting?
I really loved Past Lives, which it doesn't release it yet, but it's A24. So I imagine it'll be out at some point, because A24 does a pretty good job with those releases. This it's almost, it's similar to the Before films a little bit. It's about these a boy and a girl. They're friends in Korea when they're children, and then the girl moves first to Canada and then to America, and then years later, like over 20 years later, they're both adults, and the guy is still living in Korea. The girl is a woman now, played by Greta Lee, who you might know from Russian Doll. She was the sweet birthday baby girl.
Oh yeah.
She's an adult now, and on a whim, she decides to look this guy up from her childhood on Facebook, and she finds out he's been looking for her, and they reconnect via Skype. Eventually a few more years go by and things change and she gets married, but he plans, the guy from Korea plans on coming to America, and he says he's coming for a vacation, but she suspects, you know, he's coming to see her, and she agrees to meet him. And they just start like walking around New York and talking, and, you know, they do like sightseeing things where like they go to the Statue of Liberty and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, these two characters just talking, and it's really about what they're not saying more than what they are saying. You know, they're not like professing their love for each other or anything like that. But you read between the lines and you get this sort of very quiet, meditative film. And, I know those are not for everybody. Some people just don't care about this movie, but I really took to this. I thought this was beautiful, and I will freely admit that I wept at the end. So I really can't recommend this enough. It's Past Lives.
Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that. Brad, what's the next one you wanted to talk about?
I want to talk about Theater Camp, which is a hilarious mockumentary that premiered at the festival and got picked up by Searchlight Pictures. So you'll definitely get to see it. And they do intend to release it in theaters this year as well. It's directed by Molly Gordon and Nick Lieberman. The names you might not recognize, but Molly Gordon, you've definitely seen before, because she's been in Good Boys and Booksmart, and she's very funny. And it's written by Ben Platt and Noah Galvin, who were recently engaged, and they also have an extensive career in theater and on screen. They co-wrote the screenplay with Molly and Nick. And the movie itself is a mockumentary that follows this scrappy theater camp called Adirondacks, A-C-T-S, that takes place in the Adirondack Mountains in New York. And Amy Sedaris plays the camp's founder, Joan, who suddenly falls into a coma and leaves the camp in the hands of his her hopelessly inexperienced crypto bro son, Troy, who's played by Jimmy Tatro, the guy who's mostly suspected of drawing the dicks in American Vandal. And what follows is him trying to like keep the camp together and figure out how to do it while the rest of the camp like just isn't having it and is super frustrated and annoyed with him. Because it's theater camp, like everybody is just so like melodramatic and like flamboyant and, you know, overly enthusiastic about everything. And while the main adult cast members are all great in this movie, I found myself really loving all of the young kids in this movie because they are so gifted as far as like having great comedic timing. And there's a lot of improvisation that really comes through in this movie. And just the performances they give and how easily they go toe to toe with the adult actors from scene to scene. It's just fantastic. And it's shot in this great way too, where there's always random shots of things like happening as if they were, you know, really shooting a documentary. And it's really hard to do that in a way that doesn't feel scripted or forced, but it comes off naturally here. It's extremely funny. I laughed so hard while watching this movie, and I think people are really going to like it.
I think Will Ferrell is an executive producer on this, right?
He is, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So that's called Theater Camp. Definitely put that one on your radar. One that I wanted to talk about is called Beyond Utopia, which is a documentary about people trying to escape from North Korea. Obviously, the situation in North Korea has been pretty fraught for a long, long time. And it's been one of those things where it's felt really locked off. Certainly for people on the inside of the country, they don't have access to the outside world or the internet or, you know, any sort of anything outside of Kim Jong-un's like totalitarian, you know, iron grasp on the country. And they are taught all sorts of just factually inaccurate things about how Kim Jong-un is the greatest person on the planet and how everyone in North Korea is doing great and everyone else in every other country on earth is dying off or like is an imperialist piece of shit or whatever the party line tries to teach these folks. And there are people though who are realizing that things are getting so bad there that they go through these monumental attempts to escape the country. And you can't actually just cross the border from North Korea into South Korea because there's something like 2 million landmines that are lining that border there. So you actually, in order to escape, you have to go through China and I think it's Vietnam and Laos in order to reach Thailand, which is just a mind-blowing trip if you're, somebody who's in not ideal shape, or if you like the characters in this movie, the people in this movie have a grandmother that or children that you're trying to transfer with you. It's just really incredible what the filmmakers here are able to capture here because they basically just put cameras, they like embed cameras in with these families that are trying to escape here. And there's a whole underground network of folks who are like operatives who are trying to help them out. And it's really like a harrowing movie to watch and really eye-opening for people who've not been paying close attention to what's been going on inside North Korea. And the footage is just sort of jaw-dropping stuff. So it's called Beyond Utopia. If you are looking to educate yourself a little bit about what's going on there and see just some of the most like incredible, like real world, you know, incredibly high stakes, documentary footage that you've seen in a long, long time, check that one out. Before we go on, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify?
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, Chris, let's go back around to you. What's another one you want to talk about?
This was, I think, one of the more polarizing films at the festival. When I saw it, almost an entire row of people walked out in front of me. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm sort of attuned to audiences, and I can always tell when like an audience as a whole is like not gelling or not connecting with a movie. And I really felt that with this, and it is Magazine Dreams, which despite all that lead up I just gave, I liked. But I freely admit that this is a brutal, unpleasant movie. And I feel like a lot of people are just not going to want to put up with it. Jonathan Majors is in this, and he is phenomenal. Like he's worth seeing the movie. He makes the movie worth seeing alone, just his performance. And basically this is like it, Taxi Driver. If instead of driving a taxi, Travis Bickle wanted to be a bodybuilder. And so Jonathan Majors plays this guy who's obsessed with bodybuilding and getting his body in perfect shape. But he's clearly emotionally and mentally unwell. And he has like almost no like people skills. He doesn't really know how to interact with people. And he's also just, you know, he has like troubles with anger and rage issues. And the movie is just about him like just feeling like a loser and trying really hard to become this sort of famous bodybuilder and not getting where he needs to be and growing more and more angry and disenchanted and unpleasant. And yeah, this is it's not an easy watch, and it's also like a little bit over 2 hours, which is just too long for such punishing material. But I really liked it for what it was, and like I said, it's worth seeing for his performance alone. Jonathan Majors has like almost, I would say overnight, because I'm sure he's been working towards this for a while, but it feels like he's become one of those actors where it's like I gotta see this guy in everything because he's just that good.
Yeah, do you know if this one's been acquired by anybody yet, Chris?
I do not off the top of my head. I should look that up, but I think it might actually already have distribution, or no, actually according to Wikipedia, which we all know is always right, there's nothing listed for distributor yet, so maybe I don't know if anyone's picked this up yet.
Okay, so that's called Magazine Dreams. I'm definitely intrigued by that.
Real quick, I do want to follow up on with Chris, because I watched that too, and man, Jonathan Majors, he's very quickly like become somebody who I am just like fascinated to watch what else he does and want to see any movie with him, because like every performance he gives is just so drastically different, like right even down to his voice. I heard him at a Q&A when Devotion came out during the Chicago International Film Festival, and hearing him, his real voice, you get an even better sense of what he's doing as an actor in such a subtle way, because he's never really used his like real natural voice in a movie like this. And so he's just an amazing actor.
Awesome. All right. So, Brad, what's the next one you want to talk about?
I'm going to talk about a movie called Radical. And this movie is a bit formulaic. Yeah, it's one of those movies like Stand and Deliver or Dangerous Minds, where a teacher comes into a rough and tumble school that, you know, really is having trouble with test scores and has some kids who are constantly, you know, getting into various problems. And this teacher comes in and kind of like changes the game and shows them that there's a lot more to life, and like comes in with an innovative way to teach. But what really made this one hit hard for me and made it more powerful than some of those other movies is it follows sixth grade students. These are really young kids. They live in Matamoros, Mexico. And this place is just like super poor. It's deadly. Like these kids are walking down the street and they see dead bodies in the street. It's a normal thing. You hear gunshots echoing through the air and you hear screams. and these kids are forced to go to school every day, and the school is run down. Their computers have been stolen by thieves. The money given to them to create a new computer lab was taken by corrupt officials. And so, like, it really hits harder seeing how young these kids are and how quickly they're forced to, like, grow up and face things that some adults don't even have to deal with. And the movie is led by Eugenio Derbez, who is best known for doing a lot of comedic work. He's a very famous Mexican actor, a big comedy star. He played a kind of a similar role in Coda, being an inspirational teacher of sorts. But this is an even taller order for him because he's the lead and he just gives a fantastic performance. I feel like he's never been better than he has in this movie. And again, you know, the kids in this movie are great. And just watching their story and knowing that it's also based on a true story makes it even more impactful and significant than any of those other movies that focus on, you know, high school kids in an urban setting. It's just, it's that much more heartbreaking seeing such young kids facing, you know, seemingly insurmountable odds. But yeah, it's a great movie, very, very powerful drama. And I think it got the audience award at Sundance. So.
Oh, cool. Awesome. All right. So that's called Radical. One that I wanted to talk about is also a little bit formulaic. It's called The Starling Girl, and it's about a religious teenage girl's sexual awakening in a sort of stuffy community that would rather never talk about sexuality at all. It feels like there have been a handful of indie movies like this in recent years, but this one is worth watching, I think, for the performances. It's led by Eliza Scanlon, who you might recognize from her work as Amy Adams' younger half-sister in Sharp Objects. She was also one of the March sisters in Little Women. And she is really great here. She plays this girl who's part of a fundamentalist family, who is like a true believer in God and you know, the way of the Lord and everything, and just tries to live her life in every aspect of her life in order to sort of honor God in the best way possible. And then a youth pastor for her church returns from a missionary trip. And this guy is played by Lewis Pullman, who is the son of Bill Pullman. He played the goofy sidekick character Bob in last year's Top Gun Maverick. And he is the sort of like charismatic figure, and this younger girl is drawn to him, and the two of them begin an affair. And again, it's like, it's not like you've probably never seen this type of storytelling before, but the performances are so honest and down to earth and real. And Jimmy Simpson, who I know mostly from, like, you know, comedy works, his appearances on like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and things like that, does some of the best work of his career playing Eliza Scanlon's character's father, who was a sort of like rock and roll or country performer before he became a fundamentalist. And he backslides into a life of drinking as he learns some information about a character from his past. So all the performances are really good here. And I think like there's a tendency for movies like this to kind of feel like they're talking down to its characters, or like, I guess, excuse the phrase, but like being preachy about the morals of, like, you know, some of these characters who are set in this world, and like sort of finger wagging at like the hypocrisy that you see here. But this movie, which is directed by Laurel Parmet, I believe this is her feature debut as well. It doesn't feel like that at all. It just feels like a genuine character study of this girl who happens to be like a true believer, and like the ripple effects that that this affair causes on her family. And it's just like really, really well done. So I'm not sure if anybody has picked this one up yet, or if it has distribution or anything, but if you're interested in those types of stories and want to see like really grounded, well-realized performances, check out The Starling Girl. Chris, let's go back to you.
Yes, I did. You Hurt My Feelings, which is a film from Nicole Hoff Center. She made Enough Said. She co-wrote Can You Ever Forgive Me? She actually co-wrote The Last Duel, which rules. And this is a very funny movie. Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays a writer, and she's recently finished a book, and her agent hasn't gotten back to her about it, and so she's feeling anxious about it. And then one day she's eavesdropping on her husband, and she hears him say that he does not like the book, and it like sends her into this existential crisis. And the whole movie is about, you know, telling lies to people to make them feel better. And it's also about characters really doubting themselves. Like, her husband is a psychiatrist, and he begins to think he's a bad psychiatrist. And her sister is an interior decorator, and she's like getting sick of her clients. And her sister's husband is an actor, and he's feeling insecure about his, you know, being an actor. And so it's just all about, it's about these four characters just trying to deal with their insecurities and these existential crises. And what I really liked about this is that it's just a movie about adults talking about adult things. And we really do not get a lot of movies like that anymore. And it reminded me a lot of the early films of Woody Allen without the obvious baggage, where it's, you know, just characters in New York having conversations and being funny. And I really thought it was like a breath of fresh air. I was like, man, I miss movies like this. And it's really funny too. I laughed a lot at this. And You Hurt My Feelings.
I think this is an A24 movie. Is that right? I want to say that A24 picked this up.
I think it's, you're right, Ben. I just looked.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So hopefully that will be released at some point before the end of the year. So yeah, You Hurt My Feelings is the movie. Brad, let's go back to you.
I want to talk about Scrapper. Which is this delightful little movie about a young 12-year-old girl who is living alone in the London outskirts. Her mother has just passed away, and she's kind of just trying to get by like stealing bikes and selling them to people. And all of a sudden, her life that she's kind of, you know, carved out for herself since her mom died, she's in like this good routine. She has a friend who like she hangs out with and is skipping school throughout the day, but her estranged father Jason shows up, and it kind of throws her for a loop. And so like she's, you know, the actress that plays this 12-year-old girl named Georgie, her name's Lola Campbell, she is just delightful. She's precocious in a way that isn't like super annoying. She's got this really funny attitude about her where she's charming, but also a bit of a rapscallion, and just the way she says so much in her face without saying anything at all. It's an incredible performance. Like, it really made me think of like some of the best child performances I've seen. But it has like a little bit of like an Edgar Wright style to it. It's almost like a London urban version of Hunt for the Wilder People. It's not quite as funny, but it has a similar kind of style to it. And the young performance is similarly great. So yeah, it's a real charmer. Hopefully you guys get to see that one.
Awesome. So that's called Scrapper. The one that I wanted to talk about next also takes place in London. This takes place specifically in South London, and it's a movie called Rye Lane, which has been, I believe, picked up by Hulu. It's going to be on Hulu in the US on March 31st. So not too long from now.
It's a Searchlight movie. So it might even get a theatrical release. We'll see.
Awesome. Yeah. So Rye Lane is about a guy named Dom, who is, in his young 20s, I think, who is really having a terrible day. His ex-girlfriend of 6 years has cheated on him with his moronic best friend. And he basically has to go meet up with them to sort of clear the air. They want him to meet up and sort of basically like give them permission to move on with their lives and not feel guilty about leaving him behind and leaving him, you know, sort of emotionally broken. And he comes across this young woman named Yaz, who is played by Vivian O'Para, who is just a breath of fresh air and a sort of like a live wire who comes into Dom's life. He's an accountant. He's a very sort of buttoned up type of like emotionally restricted character. And she is like the exact opposite. She's, you know, very open and larger than life and very funny and charismatic. And this is another movie where, you know, two people just sort of walk around a city and slowly fall in love. And I love this movie. I love it. I think it's the funniest movie I've seen so far in 2023, which, again, it's like only January, but still very, very funny stuff here. I love the dynamic between these characters. The whole plot is very predictable, but it's so fun to spend time with these people that it, like, I wasn't really bothered by the predictability of what was going on. And the jokes are like so good. I thought that it really like helped sort of elevate this over, you know, something that just seems like, I've seen a lot of these like walk and talk movies that just are blatant ripoffs of Before Sunrise and just, they don't have the emotional sort of gut punch or the humor or whatever it is, that X factor that makes these movies really sing. This one actually does have all that stuff. And it really like, you sort of like feel like you're floating watching it because there's just a smile on your face the whole time. So Brad, I think you saw this one too, right?
Yeah, I love this movie so much. It's got such great youthful energy, and the performances from the two leads are so good. And I like how it breaks up the, you know, that formula of feeling like Before Sunrise by having these like flashbacks to like them telling their breakup stories, but in a way that like it's from their perspective, you know, so they're a little bit stylized and a little bit goofy. So, but yeah, it's and also shout out to I don't have his name in front of me, but whoever plays the main guy's best friend in this movie, he is hilarious in this movie. Such a funny side character.
Yeah. And David Johnson plays Dom. I don't think I mentioned him, but he I think he's in that show Industry on HBO, which I've not seen yet, but people might know him from that. So, yeah, check this one out when it comes to Hulu at the end of March. And like Brad said, maybe it'll get a theatrical release. It's called Rye Lane. Really, really enjoyed that one. Chris, let's go back to you for your last one.
Yeah, my last one is an Australian horror movie called Talk to Me. And this is a lot of fun. It's kind of nasty. It's kind of mean-spirited. And it reminded me a lot of, in tone, like The Evil Dead, the original Evil Dead. You know, people always think of Evil Dead as sort of like this cartoony comedy thing. But the first one is trying to be like a straight-up horror movie. And this sort of has that same vibe while still being, you know, amusing. And it's about... these Australian teenagers who, for fun, they have parties where they use this mummified hand to summon the dead, and they invite dead people to take over their bodies for like a short amount of time, because if they stay too long, they'll want to stay forever. And as you can imagine from that setup, they get themselves into some serious spooky trouble. And I won't say any more, but this was just a lot of fun. It was just creepy, and it has really great like makeup effects. And like I said, it's kind of mean spirited. So don't go into this expecting a lighthearted romp, but it has, you know, it has comedy in it, but it's also trying to give you the creeps, and it does. So I really dug this.
Brad, did you see this one as well?
Yeah, man, I had so much fun watching this. It's like it's got a little bit of like a gross out factor to it too, and it's like there's parts that are really unsettling, and like the premise is pretty simple, but like it's just executed in such a confident and cool way that it's dark, twisted fun, and it has a great ending too. I really like this movie a lot.
Okay, so that's called Talk to Me. And Brad, what's the last one you wanted to talk about?
The last one I want to talk about is Flora and Son. And this is a movie from John Carney, who previously did Once and Begin Again and Sing Street. And let me tell you, as long as John Carney is going to keep making movies about characters connecting and bonding and fixing relationships over music, I will see them every single time. Because he just has this incredible way of giving you these characters who are so relatable and so charming, and the relationship they have with each other, you can't help but feel for them. And the way he uses music to bring them together, and great music too. All the music in all these movies is stellar, all these original songs. And just this one is about a young mother who lives in Dublin named Flora. She had a kid very young, and they have a really adversarial relationship. The kid's named Max. He's a bit of a troublemaker. And so when she tries to buy him this or tries to repair this old guitar that she finds and gives it to him as like a way to give him some direction, he totally like shoots it down. But then she decides to take it upon herself to maybe learn guitar. And she does this by enlisting in these online guitar lessons that are given by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, an American living in Los Angeles. And they strike up this, you know, flirtatious, really just wonderful relationship with each other. And she starts kind of like helping him with these original songs that he's kind of given up on. And then there's this added layer where this she learns that the son is really into club music, something that she loves. And he's really gifted at putting together these raps and really great beats. And what this all just like comes together in this wonderful story where the music is the driving force, and you see just these relationships blossom and heal, and that it's just great. If you loved, you know, Once, if you loved, you know, Sing Street, like you will absolutely love this movie. It's just magical.
Chris, after you and I saw this movie, you were saying, what were you saying about Joseph Gordon-Levitt? You were just like, oh man, it's nice to see him in this kind of role.
It was just nice. It's nice to have Joseph Gordon-Levitt back. Like, it feels like he was gone for a while, and watching him here, I was like, oh, I forgot how charming and likable this dude is. And he's very charming and likable in this movie.
And he sings really well too. So I had no idea.
Yeah, he's a multi-talented young man, that Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, and I don't know if you said, Brad, but Eve Hewson, who was really great on The Nick, is the lead, the female lead in the movie. She plays Flora, and yeah, she's great. And
also, I might be stupid in not knowing this. Did you know that she's Bono's daughter?
I did know that, only because I remember she's been one of those people who, like, her name popped up, I don't know, for the past 10 years or something, for like a lot of blockbuster parts. So maybe for before I was at Slash Film, I had to write up like casting news about her and looked that up and was like, huh, yeah, Bono's daughter. Wow. How about that?
And it explains why she's so talented with music too. So
yeah, I was not aware of that. That's cool.
Okay. So the last one that I wanted to talk about is called Polite Society, which is about an aspiring young stunt woman in high school who basically tries to sabotage her sister's wedding because her sister is, I think, a couple years older, and the two of them are fast friends and do everything together. And her sister is trying to become an artist, and then she ends up dropping out of art school and sort of becoming the object of affection for a wealthy Indian young man in their community. And the younger sister, whose name is Rhea, is like horrified at this idea because she does not want her older sister to give up on her creative dreams, because if her older sister doesn't become an artist, does that mean that she might not become a world famous stunt woman? Like, she just doesn't want to be separated. She doesn't want who she sees to be like this smarmy young man to sort of swoop in and steal her sister out from underneath her. And so it's a movie that has like a sort of like built in level of relatability to it, because everybody can sort of understand those feelings that these characters have. But there's also a really cool sense of heightened stylization in this movie, because she wants to be the stunt woman. There's a lot of like, she makes martial arts videos in her backyard. She has fights with characters all the time, where it sort of feels like Scott Pilgrim-y a little bit, where like, you know, text will come up on the screen with like her last name versus somebody else that she's fighting, a bully at school or something. And she does like matrix jump kicks off of walls and things. Like, there's a lot of like wire work and stuff like that. Just a lot of really fun, like energetic action sequences, and the comedy is great. She has a pair of best friends who I think are used like the perfect amount, where you don't really get sick of them. And they're just like used as like comedic assassins, just like coming in for like a couple scenes here and there to really, make the most of their screen time. And the plotting here gets a little ridiculous and sort of heightened in a way to match the stylization. But like I said, there's this grounded feelings, this core to it that runs all the way through, that really like helps you understand and sort of like sympathize with these characters. This comes from Nina Manzur, who is the creator of We Are Lady Parts, which is a show on Peacock that I personally have not seen, but have heard really good things about. So it's on my list of things to check out. And especially after watching this, I definitely want to make a point to watch that show, because this is the first movie from Nina Manzur. And if this is the first one and she really like knocked it out of the park here, I'm very excited to see what else she has up her sleeve. So this one, I believe, has been picked up by, I think this is a Focus Features movie. And this one's going to be coming to theaters at the end of April of this year. So keep an eye out for Polite Society. Brad, did you see this one? I know Chris saw it.
Yeah, I did. It was a lot of fun. It's a really stylish directorial debut, and it's just I feel like this year I saw several movies that really felt like they were influenced specifically by Edgar Wright, and I feel like we're reaching a time where like those who grew up, you know, as teens, like watching Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and stuff, are like now in a position to make movies themselves. And I feel like he's a filmmaker who has really influenced a new generation of filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, what did you think of Polite Society?
It was fun. It was a fun, cute movie. And there's also like a twist midway through that's like so like out there. I was like, oh, okay, I can get on board with this. So yeah, it's a fun movie.
Awesome. All right. I think that's going to do it. I'm going to put links to all of the reviews for the movies that we talked about in the show notes here, but I encourage everybody to go to slashfilm.com. We had a bunch of people covering Sundance, and we just talked about 15 movies, but I want to say, Chris, do you have like the final numbers on how many reviews we published? I know it was over 30.
It was, I don't have the totals, but yeah, over 30, probably like 35, maybe a little bit more than that. And that's a lot, folks. So I hope you will go to slashfilm.com and read every single one.
Yeah, like legitimately, please go read these reviews. Even if you listen to this episode and feel like you have a sense of it, because you actually clicking on those articles helps justify us continue to cover this festival, which is a big deal for us. It's a big deal for the industry. It's a big deal for us to have a presence there and really continue bringing you guys the best coverage that we can. So I'm going to put links to all these. And like, yeah, if you're just like sitting around one night, don't have anything going on, like please do us a favor and just like literally click on all these and just scroll through and read them for a little bit. We would really, really appreciate that. So yeah, you can find more about all the stuff that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please subscribe to our newsletter, send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at peter@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.